It's time for the one show that takes you where others won't. Out into the wilderness, past the frontiers of what you thought was possible. With your own personal guide through this strange new landscape, the Pilgrim on the 405, Mr. Will Christ.
Well, welcome to Pilgrim Talks here on this bright, sunshiny day in Laguna Beach on the edge of the Pacific. We've got a very interesting person to talk to today. And we talked several months ago, we talked to David Pensack, who's an innovator, got a book out called Innovation for Underdogs. And we've been talking to David for a long time now. And somebody's going to bring him out to the West Coast in Orange County and help him to put together a group of people to so that he can teach them how to innovate. I think that's coming pretty soon. So the same fellow, Richard Berman, who introduced me to David Pensack, introduced me to a wonderful woman, Tish Squiaro, who is the founder and CEO, as well as the managing partner of Candor Consulting. This is a suburban Philadelphia firm, works with clients in things like leadership development, employee training, and organizational alignment. The firm is not just a suburban Philadelphia firm. It's got offices in New York, Washington, Atlanta, and they work with small clients like IBM, Gannett, Microsoft, Motorola, and eBay. Ms. Squiaro, who attended University of Pennsylvania, is the co-author with her business associate, Timothy Thomas, of a forthcoming book of advice for executives. And this book is going to be called, when it gets out this fall, Head Trash, Cleaning Out the Junk That Stands Between You and Success. So we're getting a heads up on Head Trash. We're going to get to hear a little bit about what's coming in this book this fall that they put together based upon their many, many ventures with business people in small to large businesses across the country. So, welcome, Tish.
Hi there, Will, and thanks for having me.
Well, wonderful. So, now, you have been working with CEOs for how many years?
Well, Candor's been around for about 12 years, and prior to that, I had had independent work as a coach with some senior-level people, CEOs, GMs, anyone that had a responsibility for P&L, business decisions that impacted the company's growth.
Uh-huh. Well, now, tell me a little bit about what you guys found out about head trash.
Well, it's interesting. Tim Thomas, who is the co-author of Head Trash with me, we've been together for several years, probably about seven, and many times have worked on projects together. And one day we're sitting around discussing one of the situations we have with a mutual client, and out came the word head trash. And Tim brought it up as part of his training when he took a Sandler training course years ago.
Now, what course was that again, Tish?
Because it's been the premise of why he got into consulting, is what he calls the things we need to clear up in your head that stop you from making solid business decisions is head trash.
Now, tell me again, what program was that? I couldn't hear you quite.
Sandler, you may have heard of them.
Oh, the Sandler training. Oh, yes.
Yes. What doesn't come out of Sandler?
Good. Well, head trash is certainly something that we focus a lot on in our training in Sandler all around the globe. So go ahead. So he said we're going to call this head trash, huh?
Well, yeah, because it is very common, and it is something that impacts everyone. We found seven inhibitors, we call them, or emotions that over the course of all the different relationships we've had with our clients, the same seven would pop up, and they would either, you know, immobilize someone from being able to do something or get them what we call in our book stuck from making a good decision or any decision. And we decided to write about it because it was something that we felt related to everyone, because everyone has head trash. And what we try to help them do is just manage through it. You're not going to get rid of it. It's not going to go away. But you can certainly manage through it so that you can make clear, effective business decisions or in general just regular decisions.
Okay, so talk about these seven things.
And they're very common, and people would say, oh, I have those emotions, and they can actually be considered good, like arrogance. I mean, there's been a lot written lately about Steve Jobs, and his arrogance is what made him very successful. It is to a point, but if it's not managed well, it can actually deter you from being effective, but actually ineffective or quite destructive. Fear is another. paranoia, insecurity, guilt. That's a big one that we found very often in family-run businesses. Anger, which sometimes is misled to be something else, but people lack the ability to take away the anger from a situation, and that clouds their judgment. Control. You know, control is something that's found in all of us, but over-control actually helps you become somewhat not able to function, or even people around you to be able to function. And that's just a handful. And the book is outlined to help you identify it, because they are common emotions that people don't always realize they sneak up and can actually be these inhibitors. And many of them come in pairs, and we've called them cocktails, head trash cocktails. You can have a little bit of arrogance with a splash of control, and you've got major issues. And we've kind of written ways in which we see them coupled together and cause destruction in a business. So first we help you identify them. Then we show them where they play a role to the individual, both their credibility as well as their effectiveness, and how it impacts their people, so if it's in a business setting, those around them, and the company overall, because typically we're approaching this with senior-level folks, so it is someone that can have an impact in whether the business grows or not. And then last, we give you some suggestive recommendations, or what we call tips, things that can help you manage through them.
What do you think is... Is there a physiology that has to do with how these seven thought patterns manifest themselves? Is there a physical thing in the brain?
That's a tough one. I mean, I'm certainly not a physician to attest whether the neurological parts are affected, but I would imagine that some have head trash that actually consumes them, and others have head trash in which they can monitor. For example, I have head trash. And I can feel it when it's evolving inside me before I'm about to make a decision. And I can control it. I actually can sense it and realize that it's coming. There are others who are not as intuitive, and I find that that's when those emotions run amok.
Well, I'm just wondering, I mean, what we talk about in training, in the Sandler training room, is we talk about when people are afraid or angry or paranoid, that we believe that the blood, I mean, that the blood rushes back to the amygdala, and that gets hijacked. And what we really want to do is take a deep breath and get some more oxygen to the frontal cortex. Does that make sense?
It does, because when we actually talk about some tips of managing through it, for example, something like anger, we do say take a deep breath, step away from the situation, give yourself some time, walk around the block, don't send that email. So we really do give the same advice. So, yes, I do agree that there's a way in which you have to make this work.
Okay. All right. So now, these fear, arrogance, insecurity, guilt, anger, control, paranoia, that seems to me to talk pretty much about the agenda that most CEOs have in today's marketplace, isn't it?
You know, it is. And that's why I said they are everyday emotions. And there are things that come with the job. You know, you are going to be paranoid. You are going to feel insecure. You're going to be arrogant at certain levels. So it's something that they should be ready for, because it's there. And some helpful tips on how to manage through them is probably a lifesaver.
Well, I wonder, you know, in our training, I hear people, you know, our training is not a two-day wonder. It goes on at least for a year, and sometimes for, you know, many years. And I hear people come back and say to me, I need to come back in here and clean out my trash. I need to clean out my head trash. It seems to come back.
Well, it will, because you it doesn't go away. I mean, everyday emotions that we all feel, unless you're not moving anymore, they're going to be with you. And there'll be times you can control them and times you can't. And you're going to get angry. You're going to have an air of arrogance. You're going to have guilt. I mean, these things are going to happen. And every now and then you'll need a refresher. And, you know, with head trash, we actually have programs that will align with them so that when you feel that you've lost control again, you might need to go back in and do a deep dive and do a refresher. It's a maintenance program, I mean, because it's not going to go away. And why we wanted to make it so obvious is because they are sneaky, because they're everyday emotions that you don't realize are impacting the way you're making certain decisions, because we're so used to having them. And for us, it was a revelation to say, well, you know what? People need to realize it's really a simple issue we've uncovered. Then when it's simplified, it's more manageable. But in the heightened moment, it's not always simple to do if you don't have a playbook or something to work from to help you get through it. And that's how we look at this. We'd hope people would read the chapters over and over again as they feel the need come on them.
So you've talked to a lot of CEOs, a lot of executives. What are the most common questions that executives ask when they wake up at 3 o'clock in the middle of the night?
Well, it's funny. I do get calls very late, and I do get calls very early. And it's because it's that think time that those senior-level folks have, or they allow themselves to actually think. During the workday, you're so involved in either meetings or being around others, there isn't that time to think, and that's why the calls come at those weird hours. And what they are about is usually making a decision or working through a challenge, and they want a safe haven. So I've been dubbed the CEO whisperer because at many times what I am is their conscience as they start to think something through, and I help drive them into different directions by just raising certain observations that when you're not emotionally involved with it, it's easier for someone to see. And we were able to talk through many major organizational structure changes, whether someone in the family needs to go, how to make a major shift in the organization. Some have even asked, am I still the right person for the job? Am I still the right CEO? Maybe the company's outgrown me. And that's one of the harder ones to discuss with someone. But I've had multiple CEOs have that discussion with me.
Well, you know, in identifying, I mean, I would assume that becoming aware of these things is the first step, right?
Yes, and it's hard to become aware because usually you're aware after it's already happening. You're not proactive at times on something like this. It's usually where you start to see yourself stuck, as we put it, or you're not able to make decisions as readily as you could. You second guess when you're making decisions. You feel that the people around you are looking at you as if you're not at least being able to drive anymore. It's really that second guessing of your own capabilities. That's when I find that the emotions or your head trash is taking over. Because it's quite obvious that folks got to those roles because they were capable. And then all of a sudden they become incapable. And that question of why, when that line was crossed, what happened? And it's usually because some emotion, and we call it one of our seven, have probably taken over your thinking process, and now you're stuck.
It's kind of what who was it that talks about emotional hijacking? Do you use
emotional
that term?
Hijacking?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it could be. I mean, I guess it's your emotions have been hijacked by your emotions.
Yeah. Well, what does a CEO do? I mean, you know, if he's living, it's like a fish in water. A fish is not going to know what water is, right? How does someone living in these emotions when they run amok, how do you know that that's happening?
Well, it's usually when I'm called in, it's already gotten to crisis mode. So there's a problem.
You're the firewoman.
I'm the firewoman. Fire Chief Bob. Yes, I'm usually brought in by a situation. It would be great if I were brought in when things are going great because we could proactively be addressing these, but it's usually when there's some major obstacle or challenge and we kind of talk through it. And many times they're not even recognizing it's trailing back to them. It's usually something like, my leadership team's not delivering, or I don't feel like I have the right people driving my values, or I need to assess whether or not I need to scale the organization differently. So it's always about the company. And usually through a lot of the dialogue, yes, it is obviously about the company, but there's something that is stopping the right decisions or the right moments to be happening. And that's where we start to uncover some of the head trash. And it doesn't necessarily have to even be with that person I'm talking to. It could be a series of folks within the organization. I mean, sales and sales leadership has been a big a niche for our company. Candor has helped a lot of organizations restructure their sales from the leadership on down because in sales, there's a lot of head trash.
No, not in sales.
Well, they're the easiest to admit it, too, because they'll talk the most. So, and I'm a salesperson by trade, so I recognize every head trash, so it comes quite easily for me to see it.
Well, I agree with you. I think salespeople Well, salespeople depend upon a transaction between two people, and what kind of head trash they can have, assumptions that they're making. Trying to mind read what other people are doing in their own head. They've got, you know, people saying, voices saying that you don't want people to not like you because they don't like you. They're not going to buy from you. And then you're going to starve. You're going to wind up on the street. You'll be homeless.
Right. And insecurity sets in. Well, we use probably a tool you're very familiar with because it stems from a Sandler protege, but the Object Management Group, or OMG, their sales profiles by David Curlin. I mean, those hidden weaknesses that he highlights that are very much aligned with our head trash.
Well, David Curlin is a wonderful guy, a brilliant fella, and just as persistent as you can possibly be. I always have great fun being with him.
Well, he is definitely, in all the tools that we work with and all the research we've done, his is spot on every time for sales leadership, sales individuals. And it's a great tool. So, and it lines nicely with head trash because every one of the hidden weaknesses that someone needs to work on really does come out of an emotional behavior.
Well, now, do you try to identify non-functioning organizations before they have to call you in? I mean, do you ever do, you know, pre-fire fire prevention?
We try. You know, it's interesting. I'll look in the trades and I'll see where there's a merger. I'll see when a family-run business might be expanding. I'll see where there's going to be a large downsizing. And I would know that there's tons that we can probably do to support them. But what we offer isn't always something you can cold call in, so it doesn't always get the well reception, and most people want to say everything's fine. So it's only as a trusted advisor have I found that that is when we are able to penetrate into an organization. So a referral, a recommendation, someone has heard of our work, knows about our tool. And really that's part of the reason behind Head Trash is we wanted to be able to have something out there that made people comfortable to talk about it. We actually write it with some sense of humor, because humor to us, at least in our business, is a very big part of delivering feedback and getting people comfortable with themselves and self-awareness. So it's written with some reason for you to laugh at yourself, too. So we have some commentary in there that it's written with a little sarcastic humor to get people to realize it's okay. Well, not perfect, but you know what? Knowing that, let's do something about it.
Well, now, this can't be a mass-produced consultancy, right?
Meaning our business?
Yeah. I mean, you can't do that with thousands of companies a year, can you?
Well, we certainly can as I scale the business, and the programs are going to be self-sufficient that we've actually created a head trash app that you can download, and it can be downloaded to assess which head trashes you have and how severe are they.
You can do that now?
Well, not until the book's out, because obviously it's going to align to the book, but it's called the Head Trash Index, and once the book is ready for print and to be out distribution, we're going to be able to offer that for free for folks who want to kind of gauge in it, and we'll have a blurb about what your results are, and then it'll take you to our website or to the book, and there'll be programs that are aligned with it, and hopefully someday people will actually use the programs themselves, so we can train trainers. Human resources, someone in each company who does training and development will be able to assess it and then use some of the methods of our program to do, or we'll have trainers go out and do it for you.
Excellent. Well, that's wonderful. That sounds like you're really taking on some significant issues that the executives have and really doing some fire prevention.
So we hope. Let's hope everyone agrees with you.
Well, now, executives aren't the only one to have head trash, right?
Of course not. I mean, it's everyone. I mean, we have a series that we are working on for head trash. One is around sales, because we do believe that sales individuals are deal with it constantly. Another is actually relationships, because what more emotion is there heightened than when you're in a relationship?
Well, first it's sales. I didn't head trash for salespeople, and now it's for relationships. Do you think the guys have head trash?
And gals.
Oh, I see.
So, and again, it's just going to be one of those, it's an awareness. Everything we do at Candor is to help people become self-sufficient and self-aware. We're not looking to become a crutch for anyone because that doesn't last long. We'd rather you be able to mature yourself to a place where you can be comfortable and then call us every now and then for that little boost of refresh because we all need it.
All right, so we talked a little bit about awareness, diagnosis, the therapy for this. How do people change? Is it just awareness and then it goes away? Is it group conversations? Is it 360 evaluations? Come to class and we'll teach you more. What role playing? What are the tools that you use to make any impact, to change?
Well, we will use certain profilers and 360 tool models as we help people uncover more about themselves if they don't already know certain things about themselves. I think it's important for people to believe the data points, and I have found that assessment tools do that. So, yes, there will be tools and instruments that align with Head Trash, and it will involve group setting if it's for a team, because I think there'll be teams that will have Head Trash as a group trying to strategically align the new year up ahead. They're going to have Head Trash around it. So it'll be a team, it could be individual, and I think it's going to be a culmination of one-on-one development as well as their own self-development, things that we're going to outline for them to do, homework as we call it.
Mm-hmm.
And these will last, you know, right now most of our engagements are doing these things anyway. We're just labeling it so that people can get more comfortable, but these are things we've been doing for the last 15 years. And we know what works with certain people. We know what things you have to change for other styles. And we're going to be able to just reenact that with those folks, but just gave it something that they can put a name to that makes sense.
Tell us again what those seven, are these like dysfunctional or like beliefs that people have about themselves, or are they truly emotions?
No, they're emotions. They're fear, anxiety, guilt. Not anxiety, I'm sorry. Fear, guilt, control, insecurity, arrogance, paranoia, and anger.
All right. Now I'm looking at it seems to me that there's something that is kind of an internal thing, that fear, insecurity, and paranoia seem to be internal, you know, like kind of introspective. The arrogance and anger and control seem to be externalized. Do you guys talk about anything that those kind of categories?
Well, we do talk about it in where you have some that are more about you and how you feel about yourself, and some where you actually are concerned about how others feel about you. So if that aligns with your inward and outward, then yes.
Are there executives for whom these traits make them available to the industry? I mean, this is a termination point?
Meaning, are there some of these inhibitors that have caused people to lose their jobs?
Yes.
Oh. Well, yeah. I mean, we had that Yahoo CEO who lied on his resume, so I'm assuming there was a little bit of something going on there. Either he didn't feel his resume had enough data points, so he was insecure about it, or perhaps arrogant and thought he can say anything he wanted and it fit. I mean, I don't know for sure, but I would imagine there was something that went into that would allow you to fabricate your resume.
And so, especially thinking about the app that you're going to have, but this is something that might be valuable for senior executives to use to evaluate themselves, just where they are right now, and help them increase their self-awareness.
I think it'll be great for them, but I also think it'll be a way for them to help their communication techniques with their teams. Because a CEO is only as good as the leadership team in which they build beneath them, because no company runs like an island. You need to have the right players around you. And many times you hire very smart, successful people, but you don't always know what's going on inside their heads. And then you put them to work and off everybody runs. And it's not till there's a major situation do you know something's not right. This would help them build out their teams to ensure that if there are any areas that need to be managed, well, you're giving them the same investment and benefit that they got for themselves, which is to help them to be able to help themselves in advance of it overtaking them. So we see it going both ways, that it could be something a CEO or senior leader or GM would want to have for their team as well as themselves.
Now, what I have found in training is that there's two things. I mean, that if somebody can do, if there's somebody in the world who can do anything, somebody can do something, that anybody else can do it if they have two things. One is they have to really want it. And then second, they have to know how, or they have to find somebody who's done it before. And it sounds like what you're saying is you've had success in working with people and changing their ingrained habits, right?
Correct.
How often do you find that senior executives want to make these changes, that want to become aware of these?
Now, it's an interesting point because the book's introduction says there's only two things you need to make this book work for you, acceptance and willingness. Without them, this is not going to help. They really have to be able to accept feedback and be willing to do something about it. And I've worked with CEOs, no matter how great our programs could be, and they didn't want to change. And change from the standpoint of their style. No one changes completely, so we're not miracle workers where we can actually change someone. But you can help them change their positioning or their communication skill or their approach to others, and that's really the areas we focus on. But if someone doesn't accept that there's something not working well, and it's them, and their willingness is that, well, let me try something different, then nothing is going to help them. And we've had that happen. And you part ways amicably, but you know that the timing, I always position as the timing's not right for you. Perhaps you need there to be something more severe for you to see that this is actually the issue.
You have to have that 2x4 up against the head, right?
You know, 2x4s come in many different colors and many different shapes. And I've watched
That's
them
right.
come through and rip an organization to shreds.
Yeah, it's like the farmer who borrowed the mule. Mule didn't work, and he had to go talk to the other farmer who owned the mule. Came over, hit the mule right in the head with a 2x4, and said, "Well, first you have to get his attention."
Well, I try not to come in with the 2x4. I do use a velvet hammer, as I've been told, but I'm pretty direct. And our name of the company, Candor, is very direct, very upfront. But there's a way to be direct and upfront and still make it meaningful and not painful.
Well, I wasn't thinking you were the 2x4. I was thinking sometimes the circumstances become the 2x4 that does get the executive's attention.
It does, but I have been known as the 2x4 that had come in and shook it up as well.
Well, I thought you were the CEO whisperer.
Well, it depends if they want to change. You know, it's up to them. If the willingness is there, I'm the whisperer. If I'm not, I'm the 2x4.
I think I've heard that before. Well, we can do it the easy way, or we can do it the hard way. It's your choice.
Right. And I am Italian, so I can certainly use the voice.
Excellent. Well, Tish, can you stick around after the break? I want to hear more about head trash and salespeople and David Curlin and how all that fits together.
Sounds great.
All right. We'll be right back after a word from our
I'm Al Strauss with Sandler Training. Talk to you about rule number 38. The problem the prospect brings you is never the real problem. When people have heard this rule and thought about it a bit, if they've been in sales for more than a few months, they almost always say, well, that's obvious. I've had lots and lots of prospects that told me what they wanted, I showed them what they wanted, and they didn't buy it. So it seems that it would be obvious. The problem is, most folks don't understand it, and you get in the middle of the conversation, and here's a prospect who's interested in something, you've got the something, and you just show up. And what you really need to learn how to do is ask a bunch more questions, because frankly, in most cases, the prospect doesn't even understand what the real problem is. And so if you ask three or four more questions about what they claim they need or are looking for or want, you're going to discover that it morphs, it changes, sometimes dramatically. What they end up needing is perhaps even diametrically opposed to what they originally said they were looking for. So ask the questions. Don't take the first thing they give you. Dive down into the real issues, and you're going to have yourself a much better day selling to this prospect.
And now back to Will and his guest.
Well, we've been having a great time here with Tish Squaro, the founder and CEO of Candor Consulting, who's got a book coming out this fall on head trash. And so we want to talk a little bit with Tish about head trash in the sales team, sales management team, and see how we identify that, especially found out in talking that we both use the Kirlin assessment tools from Objective Management and are very pleased with them. So, Tish, tell us something about what you've discovered about how the head trash affects salespeople.
Well, head trash is something that's emotional, and most salespeople are emotional, or they at least drive through using the emotion of either getting someone to buy, believe in them, influence someone. So there's always a heightened amount of emotion. And from that, I also found that a lot of salespeople are always looking to please or be someone that they could get approval from. And that would fall under a couple of different head trashes. It could be fear, the fear of them not being liked. It could be the fear of them not meeting the close. It could be arrogance, where they come in too pushy and they don't get the close because they've actually pissed off the other person. So we started to see a lot of correlation with sales leadership and sales reps, just the regular salesperson. Doesn't have to even be someone leading a sales team. And using David Kirlin's profiler really identifies what the hidden weaknesses are and how we align them to the emotions that we call head trash so that we can help them overcome them.
All right, so what do you do to help salespeople overcome head trash?
Well, the same thing that we would do with any individual, be a CEO or a senior leader. We first help them to identify it. And that's what's so great about the assessment tool, or any assessment tool for that matter. Once the data points are in their hands and it's touchable, I do think it makes it more real. And once they are looking at it and understanding it and they see how it's impacting their inability to succeed in their role, they actually start to pay attention. And it's also a deciding factor sometimes for people who want to be in sales or not. I mean, sales is an extremely high-pressured function, and not everyone's cut out to be in sales. Though they think it's easy, it's really very, very complicated. So we sit down and we work through what it is. You first make them aware. We show them how it ties to situations in a sales environment, which is different than we would for a CEO where it impacts the team. This is more in a sales environment, could be in the actual sale, in the actual negotiation of the contract. And we start to show the scenarios where their head trash gets in their way and they can't make the right decision, or they're not using the right techniques to influence to get what they need to get done. And then we try to give them solutions of ways in which they can overcome that.
Uh-huh. In thinking about Dave Kirlin's evaluation tool, he says that the most crucial elements for a salesperson are desire, commitment, responsibility, and look. Where does the head trash impact those four crucial elements?
Well, commitment and responsibility and desire, as you said, those are all parts of a function of how someone either belongs in the role or not. So we find that those are really geared towards helping someone see whether or not they're in the right role or in the right company or if the company's working for them. So we look at the head trashers around helping them understand, is this where they want to be? Is this the kind of role they want? So we would look through to see, well, what are the techniques of the salesperson? What are the things you should be able to do? So if they're low commitment level or high excuse making, and if there are those elements, we start to then take out, you know, the actual job description, if you will, to say, well, these are requirements. They're important. Mm-hmm. And yet you struggle with having a high rating in them. Why do you think that is? And as you peel back the onion, you start to see some of the situations where folks will say, you know what? I don't like the pressure of forcing someone to buy what I have. Or, you know, my bicycle is very slow, so I think they should think about it. So when I leave a meeting like that, I don't push them. I don't think you should. So we start to uncover, and we may find that they're in the wrong sales role. I mean, they could be in a sales-like position, could be more account management versus business development. And we really look at it that way.
Yeah, I had a client this morning who was talking to me. One of the people that he thought was not that strong, hasn't produced as much as he wanted, came back with the assessment as one of the stronger people on the team. I wonder what could be going on there.
Well, we've had that happen a few times. And usually it's if they're committed and they have the desire, I find that you can help them get through whatever it is or the hidden weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps they're not paying enough attention to that person, or they haven't set them up in the right geographical area of their sales position. I mean, they may have assumed their light, so they stopped focusing on them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That need for approval seems to pop up a lot.
I'm sorry, say that again?
That need for approval seems to pop up a lot in salespeople.
It does, because usually they're very outgoing, sociable, pleasant and friendly folks, I mean, in general. Though we have seen statistics where introverts actually make better closers. But having said that, traditionally your salespeople are the ones that are always out, very comfortable talking in any sort of setting. And really to want to be able to get that person or other folks to talk to them back, and that's kind of that needs for approval. And we all have a little bit of that. We all want to be liked. I mean, to be a leader, I mean, one of the most important things you should have, besides being inquisitive, is to be likable, which is a little different than, you know, needing to be liked. But you want to have likable qualities, because then people will follow you. But that need for approval takes it to that extreme. And that's where being liked and need for approval is so close in the radar that there's that fine line between the two where it becomes obsessive, and then the needs to be liked forces them not to make those tough decisions or that difficult conversation or gives in to the pricing that they shouldn't. And that's when, you know, they don't get to deliver or be as effective as they could be.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. Now, you mentioned buy cycle. Tell us how you interpret the buy cycle.
We interpret the buy cycle as, two things. One, either you have a very fast buy cycle or are comfortable with making decisions quickly. And like myself, if I'm going out to a store, I'm coming back with something. And then you have a slow buy cycle where you're actually more methodical and you think about it. And you do some credible checks on it. And you'll go out and you'll touch it and feel it and then come back and think about it some more. You'll get some, you know, ratings on it. And then you'll go a couple weeks later and make your decision. And, you know, that's fine in a personal setting. I think it's good to be, pensive and thoughtful in your purchases. But if you're sitting across someone who gives you the excuse, oh, I have to think about it, that should trigger you to say, well, what is it that I can give you more information? Or how can I add something more to this? Or here are the things that we have found people have asked us. Are they one of the things that you're concerned about? That would probe you to find out whether or not this is a real buyer. And if you don't feel that you need to do that because they should have a slow buy cycle of let me think about it, it makes sense, you can lose the sale.
Part of that is could be a self-limiting belief my sales cycle is really long.
Well, your sales cycle could be long, but our discussion on whether or not we're a good fit for you should be able to be something you can tell me today. You know, I find salespeople chase sales that are never going to happen. And look, not every sale is going to happen. That's fine. But you certainly don't want to be chasing the ones that aren't going to happen longer than you should.
Yeah, yeah.
Salespeople need closure. And if they can't get closure, they should figure out how to get the closure for themselves so they can move on. And it's that likable stuff, right? Because they say, oh, I can close them. Oh, they're going to want our stuff. So you really have to be able to find that closure to move on. And I do it myself. I mean, there are clients that I know could really use my help, but they're not buying. And I'll touch them every once in a while, and I'll read something about them, and I'll email them. But I still get the same answer. No, we're not interested right now. And I'll keep doing it, though, because my wanting to be utilized, because I know we can help them, is there. But I probably should stop chasing them.
Well, the belief that that I need to educate my prospect, I need to teach them everything that I know, that gets in the way too, doesn't it?
Well, it could. That's a little bit of arrogance, right? So there's another head trash that aligns because they may not want to know everything we have, or they may not be interested and just aren't able to tell us. And then if we go into this, well, let me teach you more about how wonderful we are. I mean, most people really don't want to know about stuff if they're not interested. They're just too polite to say that. So you have to be able to read between the lines. And I find folks will have a, a dash of arrogance in their head trash will just, you know, say things that they think they can convince people because we're so good. Let me teach you why you should do this. And, you know, that usually pisses somebody off to even hear that.
Uh-huh. Well, so what I'm hearing is that a way of dealing with these self-limiting records is to see how they compare to the head trash and deal with the head trash, and maybe the beliefs are a little more malleable and have a chance of going away.
Well, going away or at least be managed. Again, I'm not sure ever we take things and completely they vanish. They will rear their ugly heads every now and then, but if a person becomes strong enough to actually manage through it or fight it off or position it to themselves and talk them out of becoming, you know, enthralled by it, that's what you should be looking to achieve. And that's achievable and attainable. I mean, there's case studies of folks that we've worked with, companies that we've been part of, organizations that we've helped move by doing just that. And that's where they should set the right expectations. No one's going to never have these emotions. We're all going to have them. And I would never state that someone should get rid of one. But I am suggesting that when they are destructive to you in a business setting because they're causing you to become ineffective and stuck, you've got to be able to at least manage that.
Well, let me ask you a different question. When do you think this book is going to be available?
Well, you know, that's one of those things that you wish you knew the exact date, but you don't. I would say October, because we have a couple of book signings that we're looking to do in New York City with them. So that's what I've heard from my printer, and that's our hope.
All right. So let's suppose we're in October, and let's suppose I have 40 people sitting in my training room, and each of them have a copy of your book, and I have the ability to put up a Skype or a go-to-meeting video on the screen. Can you imagine sitting in front of your computer and talking to these people about your ideas?
I certainly can. I mean, I always like in person because I feel that that's a little bit more approachable, because folks will definitely have lots of questions, and I'll see a lot of the head shaking of how they're starting to recognize these things. But this is certainly something that can be done that way as well, because it's really about them. And if they have the book and as they're reading it, it's just one of those things that comes to life on its own, and I'd be there more for Q&A. I guarantee you people can have tons of questions about, yeah, and I do this, and what do you think about that? Oh, my goodness, I've just had this happen. Like, how did you know that? Were you at my meeting last week? And I usually say, somewhat, you and 10,000 other meetings just like you. So remember, these are not things that others aren't feeling. The good news is you're in good company. The bad news is be good at managing it.
You're not taking a book tour, are you?
Of course we will. Haven't started to plan one yet.
But you're not coming to California.
Well, it's interesting. We are adding a colleague to our list who is a Californian out on L.A., so I will be coming out to California. So that'll be something which, as the book comes out and I'm able to get more out with it, I would go anywhere, actually. I believe in it so much. I'm hoping that it develops lots of speaking engagements and chances for me to spread the word, because I know it can touch so many people and really change what they're doing.
So you probably wouldn't want to come to Orange County to Irvine to speak to people.
I would if someone invited me, without a doubt.
Well, what would be a way of inviting you right now?
Tish, would you please come? And my answer is, of course. We just have to figure out the right date.
All right. Well, we'll put that on. And maybe before that, we'll have this interview, but we can also do a webinar to get people excited about it so that they come with the book.
I would love to do that.
Well, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Now I want to ask you something on a little bit different topic here, because you're working with so many significant organizations. Have you read Jim Clifton's book? He's the chair of Gallup.
No.
Called The Coming Job Wars?
No.
I encourage you to take a look at that. He says that our biggest issue is not innovation. Our biggest issue is creating new jobs, which takes execution and sales. And he says that, you know, that we need to be creating 5 million new jobs in the next couple of years. Have you seen companies hiring?
Yes, I have, actually. I work a lot in the digital media space, so that is one industry that is frantically hiring. you know, it's those Googles and those Facebook and companies like AppNexus, and they're those large digital media companies that are changing the way we get information and receive information, and they are hiring. So it's very technical, and the interesting part is the sales folks are hard to find. Mm. So if you know people in sales who have a desire to be in that tech space, they're always looking.
Well, I happen to be meeting with a group at the Digital Media Center here in Santa Ana. This is the incubator from Santa Ana College. Gustavo Chamorro has just done an excellent job of selecting and then supporting and nurturing 20 companies. And he's asked me to come over and talk to them about their biggest need, which is, I'm an engineer. I'm a marketer. I'm a techie guy. How do I sell my stuff now that I'm ready to go to market? So we're going to spend a couple hours talking just about that, about how do I go from R&D to the marketplace.
That is a tough transition, though. It's about communications, and many times folks in the very technical engineering role lead with their intelligence and their capabilities and maybe not so much with their salesmanship. And that's the area that they probably need to accentuate because, again, people follow folks who are likable, approachable, and that's probably the area in which would be most well-suited for them to start to engage more.
Well, you know, I'm looking at 7 here, and I'm thinking about, the head trash that might be behind the kind of sales calls that are all about my product and my company and me. That might be
fear. That might be arrogance. It's a culmination. Again, that's where you probably get a cocktail. I would imagine it's arrogance and control cocktail because it's certainly, you know, my stuff's great, but I have to make sure it does. And I control it. I mean, that's one of the issues I see in a lot of these fast-growing tech companies who have extremely bright, young, first-time leaders, and some of their arrogance and control, specifically the control, doesn't allow them to hear out other ways of doing things, and many times they find themselves, as the CEO, asked to leave.
Yeah, yeah. But
now,
this is
their
my
baby,
baby
that started it, or their idea, or their innovation, and they were able to take it to a certain point, and then once it needed to scale with a little bit less control and a little bit more openness about changing how you do things, so going from entrepreneurial to more sustainable, they're not always comfortable with that transition.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that need to control, I mean, it's very important in terms of execution. When you're in R&D and you're very tight on money, I would think that there would be a big tendency to control what happens. And then when you start hiring the appropriate salespeople who are taking new things to market, which is difficult in and of itself, you got to let go of control there. So that can see where that could become a real problem at this juncture, moving from R&D to successfully marketing and selling your product or service.
Yeah, and many times it's that going to be scalable situation, right? I mean, in the beginning, you should control it because you probably know enough about it that you'll send it out and you'll get it out right. And really, every second counts when it's at that stage. But it's when you start to grow the organization and you hire salespeople to sell your product that you need to be able to make it a scalable business. And it's that going from one level or one phase of growth in an organization to the other, it's that scalability. You probably do it the best. Yes, when you do it, it's perfect, but it's not scalable because you can't possibly satisfy it as it grows to be the only person who knows how to do it. You actually have to have those dialogues with them.
Hmm. That's interesting. That's interesting. So maybe I should include some time looking at these 7 head trash issues, or at least maybe the first 3, as I talk to the entrepreneurs who are getting ready to go to market.
Well, certainly let them know we're going to have something to help them as they get out there in the next couple of months to know there's help on the way.
We're bringing the gurus. That's
we're
right.
Bringing
we're
the guru
bringing
of head trash.
Here they come. All right. Well, now Tish, I'm going to do something for you. I'm going to give you the microphone and let you tell us about your company and what your hopes and dreams and aspirations are.
Okay. Well, Candor is a management consulting company that focuses on companies going through organizational change, leadership development at all levels, and really just the ability to scale and grow within a work environment. And we have over 12 consultants as part of our team across the U.S. with a lot of training expertise. We use some excellent instruments that range from behavioral tendencies to leadership competencies to David Kerlin's sales assessments for leaders in a sales environment as well as salespeople. And with that, we have several programs that we've customized for companies as they begin to engulf on the evolution of the growth of their organization, both from an individual standpoint to a company standpoint. Our goal is to make you self-sufficient, so it's going to be a little painful, as we say, in the beginning, but it gets less and less over time. And then we only wish you give us calls every now and then as a checkup. And we are welcome to travel wherever we need to be to help our clients. We are a little different than most consultants in that we actually stay put with the client through the transition. So we sit in the meetings with them, we become part of the team, and our engagements run from 6 months to a year to as long as that you need the assistance. And if anyone is out there listening and has a need, we'd love to engage a conversation and hope we can help you. My aspiration is that Head Trash does become a change in how people view themselves and recognize that we have these emotions that sometimes get in our way, and now we've found a way in which we can actually manage through it ourselves, and it makes it a better place for people to work.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's a great aspiration. Well, we'll certainly be here to help you do that.
I welcome it. I thank you very much.
Well, now, how can they get in touch with you?
Well, my website is www.candor-consulting.com. Our office number is 610-613-4864. That is a Pennsylvania number, though we have offices throughout the U.S. It all trails to that number. I'm on LinkedIn, so you can find me on LinkedIn as Tish Squalero. I have a blog that goes out monthly on my WordPress, so I'm pretty accessible. You can Google, and I'm sure you can find me.
Excellent. Well, listen, Tish, this is wonderful. I am so glad that we had the time to talk today. It's been fun. It's been stimulating. I've learned a lot about Head Trash, and I've also got a date coming up. We're going to have you down
That's
here.
That's right. I look forward to it. I don't think I've ever been out that way.
Oh, my goodness. Well, get ready, because we'll take you down to the ocean. I'm looking right now.
I love the ocean, so I welcome that, and I will definitely take you up on that offer and be out there.
All right. Well, I'll be in touch with you, because we want to talk, see if we can get some advanced insight into the second book on Head Trash and salespeople, right?
Yes. That'll be our
Excellent.
Second edition.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, and good evening.
Well, here we go. CEOs taking a look at it. How much does their head trash limit them? Fear, arrogance, insecurity, guilt, anger, control, paranoia. How do they become aware of that? And, you know, those are the tools. Some of the tools that Tish was mentioning are the tools that we use at Sandler. We use David Kerlin's from Objective Management. We use his assessments, and we help evaluate salespeople in terms of their suitability. Obviously, find out what kind of head trash they have, and if it's too much, then maybe we don't want to hire them. If it's a little bit, then maybe we know exactly where we want to train them. So evaluating sales teams, because it's not always a matter of not knowing how. Sometimes it's a matter of just not wanting to do it because of our head trash. So, been great to be with you today. Near the 405 and near the Pacific Ocean in this beautiful, sunlit, warm day here in Laguna Beach. We look forward to being with you again. Now, before I end, I wanted to tell you that I am dedicating this show to talking with people who are actually starting new jobs, having new jobs, creating new jobs, not just hiring to replace, but creating new jobs. If you have friends or you know people, or maybe you're doing it yourself, are you hiring new people, hiring people for new jobs? I want to hear from you. I want to put together, I imagine at some point, billboards that say in Orange County, in Riverside County, last month,
created this many new jobs? Because I think that's what we need to be doing over the next 5 years. If you haven't read Jim Clifton's book, The Coming Jobs Wars, I encourage you to get that and take a look at it. Get it on Kindle, get it at Amazon, get it at Barnes & Noble. Good read, challenging read. It'll scare the pants off you. All right, this is the Pilgrim on the 405 wishing you and yours a great evening. Take care.
You've been listening to your own personal guide to the strange new world of the 21st century, The Pilgrim on the 405.